Oops, and this is Sports Center.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'ma tell you what you need to know. I'ma tell you what you need to hear. Cause the truth will be too much. Yeah, the truth will be, yeah, the truth will be. I'ma tell you what you need to know.
Program begins right now here in the program. Talking a little Royals baseball, a little Major League Baseball with Jeff Passan, our Major League Baseball insider from ESPN. He's coming up in our next segment. We will talk to Jeff. Of course, time now for our Need to Know. Our Need to Know, proudly brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Did you know that you can be seen quickly? That's right. You've got a convenient location. 435 and all, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., no appointment necessary. Treatment available for any acute orthopedic injury, including sports-related injuries for those 5 years old and above. Anything from bone fractures, dislocations, joint injuries, sprains, strains. For sports-related orthopedic injuries, see the same experts that care for the Royals, the Chiefs, and lots of middle school and high school athletes all over the metro. Find it right now at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics or walk right in. It's between 8 and 7 here on a weekday, so walk right in right there at 435 and all. It's kind of catty corner from where the Topgolf is. Can't miss it. Great facility, easy in and out for you. It's the University of Kansas Health System. I'll start you off with what you need to know today. A little bit of news coming from the world of baseball. That, of course, the Royals reacting to the comments of Whit Merrifield, reacting to the fact that they have to call up 8 players. 10 guys sent down, but you can't replace both starting pitchers until it's been 4 days from their start. So that's why the Royals called up 8 players. They announced that top first base prospect Nick Prado will come up from AAA. He's one of the 8 players. Also catcher Sebastian Rivero, infielder Michael Garcia, who, by the way, has been highlighted by my buddy Randy Gisarelli on our Kauffman Corner podcast for one of our minor league minutes. Fine on base guy. Not a lot of power, kind of similar to Nicky Lopez is what you'd expect in that game. Lefty Angel Zerpa. Or no, that's Angel. He's an Angel, right? He's not Angel, is he? It's Angel Zerpa. I've been recalled from AA Arkansas. Additionally, the Royals selected the contracts of infielder, outfielder Nate Eaton, catcher Freddie Fermin, outfielder Brewer Hicklin, and infielder Michael Massey from Omaha. Probably the best prospect of the bunch. It's either Prado, who still carries that lineage of being a first-round draft pick, but Michael Massey has hit the ball really, really well. Promoted from AA, where he's probably a little bit old, to AAA, hit even better in AAA than he did in AA. So Michael Massey, a guy to look for in that lineup here for the Kansas City Royals, because he's a guy that could make a number of guys, including Whit Merrifield, expendable, right? That's one of the things that, you know, we talk about all the depth that they've had in the middle infield. Well, it gets even deeper with a guy like Michael Massey, who has a little pop in his bat, something that, you know, the rest of the Royals middle infield really hasn't had. Lineup for tonight's game with the Toronto Blue Jays: Edward Olivares will lead off and play left. Bobby Witt at short. Vinny Pascantino will DH and bat third. Emmanuel Rivera hits cleanup at third base. Ryan O'Hearn is in right. Nick Prado at first base, bats sixth. Nick Eaton is in center. I mentioned infielder, outfielder Nick Eaton. He's in center tonight. Nicky Lopez batting eighth at second base, and Sebastian Rivero catching. Angel Zerpa gets the call tonight. On the mound, I will point out that two players hitting above Nicky Lopez that were not deemed good enough to be on the 26-man roster are now deemed to hit in front of Nicky Lopez. I always find that a little bit intriguing. Oh, but we think that guy's going to be a great prospect. We're going to bet him. So he went from being not in the top 26 to now being a guy that's going to bat towards the top of your lineup. I find that intriguing, to say the least.
And a consistent method they seem to use, at least this year, with this recent crop. I'm trying to think, didn't Hosmer debut at like 6?
In the batting order?
Yeah.
I don't know, did he? There's a lot of days where guys were being called up and thrown into the 1, 2, or 3 spot.
Yeah, and this year it seems to be even more common. But yeah, it's kind of a, I don't quite get it. I'm not, you know, as huge into the analytics as most people, but the least experienced guy on your roster batting one doesn't seem like the best idea.
No, I would agree. Phil Mickelson said he respects Tiger Woods' opinion on the LIV golf. Tiger chastising the players that have left. You know, Mickelson, who afterwards said those who joined the breakaway series had turned their back on what has allowed them to get to this position, said, okay, I respect the opinion of it. You know, and my $150 million check cashed.
It's pretty easy to kind of ignore slash quote respect the opinions when, I mean, I would respect a lot of opinions for nine figures.
At least he didn't get into a pissing match with him. Can we give credit for that?
That's a good point. I think this is kind of the first time in all of this, I think, that Phil has kind of said, you know, kind of done what probably is the smart thing, you know, publicly.
Justin Rose withdrew from the Open on Thursday morning because of a back injury. So one note there. The leaderboard at the British Open, the Open, if you will, here on the first day. Cameron Young of the United States, 8-under. Rory McIlroy, 2nd at 6-under. Cam Smith of, is that Australia or New Zealand? Can I roll over that flag? I don't know my golf that well, so I apologize. What is that flag? I guess New Zealand, isn't it? I don't know. Anyway, one of them island nations down there. Cameron Smith at 5-under, along with Robert Dinwiddie at 5-under. Barclay Brown, 4-under. Kurt Kitayama at 4-under. And Lee Westwood, Brad Kennedy, Victor Hovland, Taylor Gooch, Dustin Johnson, and Scottie Scheffler, also all at 4-under. So there's a whole host of golfers at 4-under. Top 12 are 4-under or better, with the leader, Cameron Young, at 8-under, McIlroy 6-under, Cam Smith and Robert Dinwiddie at 5-under, and then a whole host of golfers, 8 of them at 4-under.
So there's a Gooch next to a Johnson?
Yeah.
I just want to confirm. I may have placed some bets on this event. Yeah. I just need to know.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. There's a Gooch next to a Johnson.
All right. Got it. Cameron Smith is Australian.
So that's the Australian flag?
Yes. I think it does. You are right. They both kind of have that Union Jack.
Union Jack's part of it.
A part of it. New Zealand actually had a big deal where they tried to change their flag, and somebody said, let's put I think the Kiwi is the official bird down there.
Did it happen or no?
No, they kept their design. I can't really tell a real... So the only notable difference between the flags of Australia and the flags of New Zealand, the flag of New Zealand has the Union Jack in that same corner with four red stars. The Australian flag has the Union Jack with one white star below it.
By the way, Tiger Woods, 6-over. Just 14 strokes off.
Hey, he could get there.
Was he plus 6,500 when we talked to Fat Jack yesterday? Don't think he's got the charge.
I would be a golfer of his stature. It's almost impossible to separate, you know, this. But if it was somebody who had just whatever he's achieved over the course of the last year, and you factor in the injury, if it was anybody but who didn't have the name Tiger Woods, he wouldn't be approaching 60 plus 6,500. And those are long odds. Don't get me wrong, but. How much did the name Tiger Woods help him to get to that level for the odds?
Oh, I think any odds that go up on when you see, like, at minus 800 when he had no shot, people were still pounding him betting-wise. But whatever number's up there, it's not enough because the odds are longer. Like, he doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he had – I think we all want to hold on to what happened in the Masters in, what, 2019? And that was incredible, and as a, you know, as a fan of golf, that was a blast. But and a fan of Tiger, somebody who got into golf because of Tiger. But it, you know, I let go a long time ago the possibility of Tiger Woods catching Nicklaus for he's already caught Snead for all time tournament wins, but I let go of him potentially catching Nicklaus long ago.
Yeah. No doubt. All right, a couple other nuggets here before we take a break and get to Jeff Passan. DeAndre Ayton for you NBA fans like myself, has agreed to a four-year, $133 million offer sheet with the Indiana Pacers.
Did Sean Miller offer more for him to come play at Xavier?
Probably. Suns have 48 hours to match. Do they match?
113?
133.
I don't know. I mean, they're coming to the end of the Chris Paul time, and how much longer do they have a chance to chase a title?
So
I would match it if I'm the Suns. I think
I would
he's
match
worth
it.
That.
If nothing else, you can trade him. I absolutely think they'll match it.
I think that's worth matching, yes.
You know, you can't trade a guy you just let walk. So I think he will match it for sure. I think that's happening. All right, let's take a break. I want to get to Jeff Passan. We've got a lot to get to. ESPN senior Major League Baseball insider joins us next here in the program.
Husband, father, Elmo impersonator?
Yeah!
He wrote The Arm and is currently writing its follow-up, The Leg. He has everyone's phone number, even yours. He's MLB insider Jeff Passan of ESPN, only on the program.
Hi, welcome back here in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Chatting with Frank Bull, rudely interrupted by Frank Bull. Something about asshats and I don't know what he was saying.
Something about the Woodrow Wilson administration. Well,
I don't know what it was. He was yelling at the interns. I mean, I don't know.
Somebody has to.
I think at this juncture of Frank's career, that would be unwise. That would be unwise. Let's talk to Jeff Passan. From what I gather, he's not an asshat. Senior Major League Baseball insider for ESPN. Always love talking our baseball with Jeff Passan. He's brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. You want a great place to watch you some baseball? That's Twin Peaks. Go to TwinPeaksRestaurant.com to find the location nearest you. 29-degree man-sized draft beers. Premium cocktails served over ice balls. Yep, they got those as well. They're great made from scratch menu. Always a great time. You know, yesterday was National French Fry Day. Hope you enjoyed it. Today, National Mac and Cheese Day. Dravetta, you look hungry. The perfect pairing. Any Twin Peaks made from scratch entree. Twin Peaks 3 cheese mac and cheese awaits, featuring a blend of three cheeses, seasoned breadcrumbs, bacon bits, and butter. Celebrate the summer with their newly added sweet and smoky ribs, served with their famous mac and creamy coleslaw. It is a great time to get to Twin Peaks. Go to TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. Jeff, how are you, my friend?
I am well, Saran, and yourself?
Good. Had a conversation with Dayton Moore. We're going to replay it here for the kicker after we get done talking to you. Just your reaction to the Royals and 10 players not headed north of the border.
That's a lot. And, you know, I look at this a couple of different ways, and I think I have a different perspective than most of my peers because I live in Kansas City, because I got text messages from friends who are Royals fans, and I suppose I will start there. It's disappointing. And it's not disappointing because I have a personal opinion on whether somebody should or should not get vaccinated. That's not what is disappointing, because it's embarrassing for the franchise, because it's embarrassing to the fans of the franchise, because the Royals name is now being mixed among a set of people who, frankly, it does not want to be there. And I think this goes back to a couple different things. Number one, the individual choice of players. But number two, just how much influence the organization has over its players and in the expectations. And the thing that stands out most to me, Saran, is that coming into this season, the Royals executives, the Royals players, everybody in the organization said they had playoff aspirations, right? Mm-hmm. And I really do wonder if their record was reversed right now, if they were 53-35 instead of 35-53, whether this would even be an issue. Because I look at the New York Yankees, who had a lot of unvaccinated players heading into spring training this year. You know what they said? little different because they're going to Toronto for 9 games as opposed to the 4 that the Royals are going. But they said, we don't want to lose even a single game because we missed a player who is imperative to us winning it. And so everybody, regardless of what their feelings were on the vaccine, went out, got vaccinated for the betterment of the team. And that just didn't happen with Kansas City Royals. And if there's a reason that fans have to be angry, I think that's it. I think it's that the players didn't prioritize winning ball games in Toronto as being important enough to dissuade them from doing something, and that the Royals front office didn't have enough sway inside the clubhouse to convince them to do it. And perhaps part of that is the fact that some of the coaching staff is unvaccinated as well. And you see that with a tweet that Lynn Worthy just put out that says Cal Eldred's not there, Keone Drenn's not there, and Parker Morin's not there.
Is it as simple as the Yankees want to win more than the Royals, or is that battery in backwards? Is that unfair to characterize it that way? That, you know, like you said, if the Royals were winning, you'd be like, oh, look, you know, they celebrate their, you know, players' individuality, and, you know, will we be putting some kind of somehow this would be marked as a positive because the wins and losses must all, if you're winning, it all comes from success. Losing is all failure.
Boy, that is an interesting question. Does this mean that the Yankees want to win more than the Royals? I don't think it means the Yankees want to win more than the Royals. I think it means that the Yankees, I think this is just a fact, the Yankees were willing to put aside personal beliefs and preferences in order to try and have a better chance of winning. And maybe that's a semantic thing, Saran. I can acknowledge that, you know, it's 6 of 1, half dozen of another, but the facts are the facts, right? The Kansas City Royals are likelier to lose because of the players who are not there. The New York Yankees are likelier to win because of the players who are there. Thus, the individual decisions that are made have a direct impact on likelihood of winning. And if you're having a direct impact on likelihood of winning, does that not mean you want to win more or not win as much?
I think it's fair to conclude that the Yankees want to win more, but I also think it's fair to conclude that the Yankees had more reason to believe they could win, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, I think that's spot on. The Yankees were a better team coming into this season. The Yankees have won in recent years. All of those things are true, and still, it's the number that gets you, right? Like that's the part of this story that to me really stands out: the fact that for the first 3+ months of the season, the largest number of players, and it was 3 teams, the largest number of players who didn't make the trip to Toronto because they were unvaccinated was 4. The Royals have 10. It's a lot of players.
I do think it you know needs to be pointed out too that the people that aren't going, like, you know, Whit Merrifield's not having a good year. It's not good to tack this on. Cal Eldred's not having a good year. I mean, he's probably the most obvious one. I mean, you know, like I described it, it's the Buddy Bell, you're not good enough to be an AAH. You know, that probably doesn't apply to management because nobody acts like an AAH, but everyone gets it. Like, you can be a jerk player. If you're really, really good, they'll tolerate you. If you're a jerk and you're not so good, there's no point. We can find somebody who's a nice guy to be average, right?
Yeah, the backup catcher is always the nicest guy in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
In the Royals' case, he's also unvaccinated. So
yeah, in this case, yes. But I mean, I think like Cal Eldred can't survive. This is it. It's official. I don't even need to say.
You think because he's unvaccinated or because?
No, I think you can't have. You can't have your entire organization having to defend you at every turn and then be smack dab in the middle of a controversy.
Yeah.
It's too much. Right. It's like how long is the organization going to waste time and energy justifying Cal Eldred? There's nothing mathematically on the ball field that justifies it. And it's like every time somebody has a couple of good innings, it's like, well, did you see the last 2 innings he had? Do you see the 6.55 ERA? I mean, that's his whole performance, and all of it was performed under Cal Eldred, not just the last 2 innings. Like, they find these successes to defend him because they respect the man, they appreciate appreciate him. They like him. I get it. But at some point, like, it becomes a matter of, if you won't do it, I'll get someone who will.
And yeah, I don't have much to add there.
Yeah, but that's why I say this is the final straw. This right here for Cal Eldred, because now it's not they're defending. This they can't defend.
I will say this. I think when you have a bunch of pitchers who come to the big leagues and can't throw strikes, that goes beyond Cal Eldred.
Sure,
it's hard to fix what arrives broken.
Agreed.
But if you have something sent to you in the mail and it comes broken, is it your job to glue it back together? No. So there's an organizational component, no question to this. But the fact that you don't see guys getting better in the big leagues, I think says everything you need to know.
Well, but and Dayton Moore said today he cited himself, his wife, his kids, John Sherman and his family, JJ Piccola and his family, and he said our leadership team. I think he even said Alex Zumwalt. I'd have to go back and listen, and we'll play it again. It's coming up next, by the way. He said, our leadership team has all been vaccinated. We try to lead by example. Notable by his absence is Cal Eldred. And I'm not saying, well, it's Cal Eldred's fault that these 10 guys didn't vaccinate, but he's party to it, right? Yeah. And so, you know.
Well, that goes back to the notion of leaders and vaccination. A lot of places in Major League Baseball, especially last season, changed a little bit this year. You know, when Aaron Judge got vaccinated, I think that sent a real message inside the Yankees clubhouse where, okay, if he's doing it, what excuse do I have? And isn't that what people who aren't vaccinated quite often are looking for peers, for others whom they respect, or even if they don't respect him or her, they look at this person and say, well, if this person's not doing it, then why should I? As an organization, you can have your GM, you can have your president of baseball operations, you can have your manager, you can have your hitting coach, but if there's one crack in that foundation, man, that one crack is going to spread very quickly. And I think that people looked at that inside the Royals organization and said, well, if our pitching coach is not holding himself to that standard, then why do I need to when I have reasons A, B, and C not to on top of that? It reinforces this idea that you've planted in your head already that this is not something I should do.
Organizations, the job of coaching staffs is to get a team ready to play.
Yes.
And if you're party to 10 guys not being ready to play in Toronto, you got to go. That's where I boil it down. I want to move to this. I had some people around baseball tell me, hey, one of the things, like, the Royals are catching a lot of heat right now for 10 guys not being there. But one of the things the Royals didn't do is, like, go around splashing around fake vaccination cards or throwing guys on the IL, you know, when they weren't hurt. And they said that's going on too. Like, some of the teams, they said, be careful about citing all the teams that only have one or two guys. Because there's quite a few ILs that happen conveniently on the way to Toronto. There's fake vaccination cards out there. I haven't seen anybody get caught in baseball.
I just want to jump in here so I don't get lumped in with the fake vaccination thing. I've heard the same thing. There is zero proof.
Okay.
None that people are using. I mean, Saran, it's a federal crime.
Antonio Brown did it in the NFL. We don't have anybody in baseball, but Antonio Brown got busted for it in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it is legitimately a federal crime to do that, and now you're talking about crossing a border with a fake vaccination card, so it turns into literally an international incident. I would like to believe that people are not dumb enough to put themselves in jeopardy like that.
Salvador Perez is vaccinated. I think that speaks to his leadership. I've been told that he was very big. Now, listen, to go in and out of the country, you have to be vaccinated. So for the international Latin players to come, you know, the ones that aren't coming from a U.S. territory like Puerto Rico, they have to be vaccinated to do that. But as I understand it,
literally every Latin American player on the Royals roster right now is vaccinated. And that's, We have, I believe, all 10 are from the U.S. who are not. So that's, I mean, Is that not the most 2022 story of all?
Yeah. Yes. Can Whit Merrifield be back for this ball club after his comments? I mean, I'm not saying after the All-Star break, but because I don't think you just trade him and move him from nothing, although I'm sure conversations were had about releasing him. When you pretty much say, well, yeah, you know, I might try a little harder, basically if you boil down to what he said, if we were contending. I mean, that is – I know they're pissed off people at Kauffman because of those comments.
Yes,
so
that is accurate.
I mean, can he really be back for this team next year?
Sure. I mean,
should he be?
I think it depends on what you can get. I mean, I hate to be a capitalistic pig trying to figure out what value another person has and what you can get back in return for him. His contract's going to be for $10.5 million. He hasn't been performing, you know, all that well this year. You could make a very good argument that the combination of salary, performance, and admission that he would have been likelier to get vaccinated if the team was competitive. I mean, it would not shock me to see him moved before the August 2nd trade deadline.
Okay. Andrew Benintendi, how much does his trade value hurt?
It's hurt. I mean, I let's put it this way. The Yankees have only 3 games left in Toronto. The Red Sox have only 3 games left in Toronto. Rays have only 5 games left in Toronto. So it's not like it would be an enormously significant loss, but then you talk about the possibility of the playoffs. And if Andrew Benintendi is missing for a playoff series, boy, oh boy, that's where it becomes really problematic. And I'm not sure that's a risk that that teams in the AL East in particular, or maybe just the American League altogether, are going to be willing to take. And even that question existing, will this team want to do it, or is this trade going to be contingent on him getting vaccinated in order for it to go through, it dings the trade value a fair bit, I think. And the notion that the Royals are going to get a king's ransom for him anymore, I'm not on board with that where I was at one point.
Jeff, you're the man. We're short on time. We want to replay the Dayton Moore comments, so we will end it here, and I will talk with you next week, my friend.
Look forward to it. Thanks, pal.
All right, buddy. Jeff Passan, best in the business, senior Major League Baseball insider for ESPN. Make sure you check out his great work. Make sure you're following him for all the very latest on the game of baseball. You hear him exclusively right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll take a break. Come back next. We'll let you hear the conversation again with Dayton Moore.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
All right, we had a chance to talk with Dayton Moore a little bit earlier. We'll wrap things up with our kicker. Another round of the conversation with the president of baseball operations for the Royals. Appreciate his time then. Appreciate it now. Started things off by asking Dayton that... I assumed he knew this was coming. Was I right about that?
No, I think you have it exactly right. I mean, we've been dreading this day for a while, knowing what the outcome was probably going to be. No matter how hard we tried and to educate our players on what was going to happen, what the vaccine presents to them, based on our medical opinions and the science that was presented to them. I mean, at the end of the day, they just they felt that it was a choice that didn't fit who they are and what they wanted to do. And so we had to support that. I mean, as you know, these players who we respect greatly have every right to decide, what they want to put in their body.
Is this something that, we get to the deadline right now? Obviously, you're going to Toronto, but where was the timeline where it's like, okay, you knew we're going to be without this many players. By that, I'm asking how much time did you have to prepare for how many guys you're going to have to call up to fill this?
Well, about two and a half weeks ago, when it was clear that, several of our players decided they weren't going to get the vaccine. And at that point, it was the Johnson & Johnson vaccine that was the only one that would meet the timeline. But they, like I said, they decided that that wasn't something that they wanted to do. And so we've had about a couple of weeks really to kind of prepare and strategize on how we were going to, massage the roster and improve the roster the very best we could based on the players available to us. And, we could have done a number of different things, truthfully. I mean, we could have put players on the IL. We could have optioned players out. And we probably could have got our numbers down to about two or three, truthfully. And, we decided we're just going to play it straight. We're going to do what's right. And we decided that, we would just accept the consequences for what they are. Again, it's a player decision. And sir, let me say this. I'm really proud of, our group, our medical team, Nick Kenny and the staff, the docs at the University of Kansas Health System who spent so much time counseling and educating and trying to make players and people feel at ease about the vaccine. And they did a terrific job. And a lot of players and people decided to get vaccinated. But again, at the end of the day, we're disappointed that we have so many players who chose not to be vaccinated and therefore they can't participate in the games in Toronto. We're disappointed in that, but we're also appreciative of those that decided to get vaccinated and leave it up to the individuals to make that choice.
You use the word disappointed. The comments of Whit Merrifield, you no doubt have seen those by now. They basically said if we were in contention or if I thought we were going to be in contention, then yeah, maybe I'd have a different opinion. That has not set well with a lot of fans around Kansas City. How does that sit with you?
Well, it's very difficult at times to articulate feelings and emotions, and sometimes it just comes out wrong. When I first heard that, I was very disappointed and pretty disgusted, truthfully. But I also know that's not who Whit is. And so as I begin to communicate with Whit about that, he made it very clear that he was sorry for how that came out, and I have to accept that and move on. And I'm not going to kick him when he's down, because I do know what Merrifield has meant to our team, the great work that he does in this community. And I just think it was just very poor choice of words. But Sharon, as you're a competitor, and this is such a great sports town, and we all know that just doesn't set well. And it's not who we are, and it's not what we're about. We're an all for one, one for all mentality, in this community. And, we win together, we lose together. And, it's just, I think just a very poor choice of words. And, he'll learn from that. And, we all will. And, it's unfortunate, but, we got to try to move on from it. And we'll get an opportunity to discuss, that statement at some point in time.
So he will be made available. Yeah, I guess I assume the next time, after the All-Star break, the next game.
That I would he think. Yeah, in? I would okay. think. Yeah, I would think. Sure. Okay.
He just, I'll ask the question because many people have speculated about it. He had one of the 25 longest consecutive game streaks in baseball history that ended when he sat out. People are connecting the dots that, okay, this was, because you lose pay when you don't play, this has been collectively bargained. Players have the right not to play, but there's also a financial ramification for doing it. And just give you a chance to react to, first, and of course Whit will have that opportunity later, that the injury was maybe the prelude to hitting an IL stint instead of losing the pay. I mean, that, you know, this streak, I don't doubt the man. He's obviously tough. You don't play as many games as he did, but you know, for it to come up at this time, just bad timing, the situation or something to.
Yeah, I think it was, for I really do. I met with Witt. You know, I heard some of that a little bit. And I met with Witt. He sat in my office, and he clearly had major issues with the toe. And you know, it was his right big toe, and it affected his ability to be stable and push off that backside as he, you know, delivered the barrel at a baseball. And you know, there's no doubt he was in pain, and you know, he wanted to wait it out as long as he could. I realize it's the optics of that, you know, potentially aren't great, but I don't doubt for one bit that he was dealing with pain. And I think a lot of players would have probably went on the IL maybe a week or two prior just to try to calm it down and leading up into the All-Star break. And so I'm not going to second guess that. You know, as you know, especially this time of year, there are so many players dealing with all kinds of issues, physical issues, certainly at all parts of their bodies. And you can justify somebody going on the IL quite a bit, truthfully, over the course of the season. And it's not that, you know, players want to shy away from that. It's not that it threatens their toughness or what have you. But as you know, I mean, it's pretty common in major league clubhouses and locker rooms that, you know, guys just don't want to go on the IL. They want to be perceived as somebody who's going to play every day. Witt certainly represents that, has always represented that. And so, you know, I don't question that.
A couple more questions with Dayton Moore, who I know is very busy as the draft is right around the corner. Dayton, you have said that one of the reasons you guys won, and one of the things, and I think you even laid it out, that when you were, you know, envisioning how you guys were going to build a world champion, you said, you know, we can't outspend everybody, but we can outcare. And, you know, we can think of the players more. That's always been something that I think has been very reflective. The organization as a whole, how it handled the pandemic and paying employees. You, the organization, and through you, paying minor leaguers, you guys have gone above and beyond for your players. I think that's very well documented. You know, I heard it phrased, somebody said today, they said, well, when does it get paid back by the players, right? There was a feeling that, you know, hey, you know, Eric Hosmer, maybe he could have signed. He didn't. Okay, it didn't pay off for the organization there. Here's a time where there's a vaccine that medical people say is safe and the majority of the population is taken, and they would be able to play. And the comments, which you've already covered, of Witt's that are there. You know, the organization does all these things, goes above and beyond. When do the players pay it back? There's frustration from the fans and seeing what they've seen this organization do and not having it reciprocated from the players. Do you feel that same frustration? And I would even go so far as to say pain.
Well, I'm a human being, and just like everybody else, and, you know, and certainly there's certain frustrations that I've had throughout the course of my time, you know, in professional baseball. But what I've learned, Saran, is as in leadership, especially leading, you know, 16 to 25 year olds, most of my professional life, the most important thing that I can do is model the behavior that I want seen in them. And so I'm vaccinated. My wife is vaccinated. Our three children are vaccinated. John Sherman and his family is vaccinated. Mike Matheny, JJ Piccolo, Scott Sharp, I mean, all of the people at the highest level of leadership in this organization, Jin Wong, I mean, we're all vaccinated, and as it pertains to what we're dealing with right now. And so, but what I've learned is, you know, we just got to model the behavior we want seen, and nobody owes us anything. We just have to continue to lead and to lead strong in all different areas. And I think this, Saran, I really believe that this moment, this situation that we're dealing with is a moment that we're going to reflect back on and realize that it's a time where our team is becoming stronger, our organization is becoming stronger. We've already dealt with a lot of frustration and tension throughout the course of this season, to be very candid with you. And it's making us better. And we're fortunate that John Sherman, who, by the way, shares in the disappointment that we all have about our players' unwillingness to get vaccinated and to participate with the team in Canada. I mean, he shares that as well. But I think it's a defining moment for all of us as we go through this, that it's going to make us better. It's going to make us stronger. I really believe that. There's no doubt there's talent on the field, and we're going to have a lot of flexibility, you know, in the next 1 to 4 years to continue to, you know, acquire talent, develop talent that blends in with this group that we have. And I'm excited that the pitching continues to move in the right direction. And we're getting the necessary experience that they need to be consistent winners.
Two more questions. One, trade value for some of the players. Andrew Benintendi's name has been a popular one as to maybe being someone that would be targeted by a team that's out there looking to get into the playoffs this year. You know, there are mixed reports. Some say the Yankees are backing out, whether they were really interested or not, I don't know, but there's that report. There's other reports that say that no, teams would still be interested in the idea that the player would change his mind and become vaccinated. Talking about American League teams that would potentially have to play a playoff series in Toronto. Do you feel that the trade value of any of these players, if they were being talked about, has been compromised?
I mean, it could, but let me say this. I mean, you know, we have always been very transparent about the physical and mental well-being of all of our players. And so as trade discussions begin, I mean, we're an open book. And although JJ is taking the lead role in all of our trade discussions at this point in time, you know, I know that he has been very transparent with all the teams that are interested in our players, whether they're vaccinated or not. I mean, that's not something that we ever want to discuss publicly because of just the certain, you know, credibility that we must have in that clubhouse, the confidentiality of the health of our players. But, you know, JJ has been transparent about that, and we've talked about that, and he has shared with me that he has been open with the teams that have interest in our players that are unvaccinated, and we shared that. And so, you know, at the end of the day, it could, there's no doubt. I mean, you come to the wire and down to the wire, and maybe the team wants to, you know if the player is willing to get vaccinated, and we have to cross that bridge when it comes. And no different than, you know, we've had deals in the past where teams have wanted to try to reach out and see if they could come to some type of long-term agreement or put some type of structure in place that would give them comfort that they could sign the player before they agree to give up a few players that they think are worthy in a deal as such. So, yeah, it could, but we'll see how that unfolds. But I do believe, Saran, that, you know, there's certainly enough teams interested that it's not going to, you know, it's not going to take away from, you know, just the interest with a lot of teams. So.
Okay. Last question. There's a 4-day break, the All-Star break coming on the other side of this Toronto series. And I want to reiterate, there is a financial ramification for not going, for not being vaccinated and eligible to enter Canada and play in this series. But it also does create an 8-day break. Players are grinding. The season's a grind. We talk about it all the time. Anybody who understands the culture of baseball knows how difficult these seasons are. And do you worry about, you know, the guys that are up there having some frustrations and animosity towards the players who are not going to be there in Toronto, and that there will be lasting effects to the chemistry of your team moving forward?
What I believe is this. I mean, baseball players and athletes adapt very well. And throughout the course of a major league season, there is, unfortunately, you know, there's drama that occurs, and there's relationships that are strained. It's happened in every team that I've ever been a part of. And so players have a unique ability to work through that, to deal with the conflicts that occur. And they will, if relationships need to be mended, they will do that. They always have. And like I said, I think fortunately or unfortunately, however you look at this, and it is an unfortunate situation. But as it pertains to relationship building, I think this perhaps is going to be a good thing for us as we move forward. And I'm looking forward to our guys putting this behind them and just focus on playing baseball.
Dayton, I know you're busy. Thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll let you get back to work and look forward to talking about hopefully a very successful draft here in the near future.
Always, Seren. Thank you for having me.